Welcome to One Decent Pastor, a weekly podcast of The Door located in Central Oregon, where three completely average guys join forces to make one decent pastor and to discuss, discover, and promote all things Bible.
We're live. I'm One Decent Pastor.
That's his standard intro now.
It is.
Yeah. And they're off.
That's a good intro. I messed with it for a while, tried some different things, and like, yeah.
How can we do, like, you know, let's get ready to rumble, like the boxing match?
Yeah, try that out, Chad.
Or the UFC.
Let's get
thing.
Ready to pastor.
It's like, something like that. Time.
Yeah. Sunday.
And we all come running in and get introduced. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, when you walk on music. You
know. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're walking.
Yeah.
Oh, the podcast does have music that starts us out and goes through the spiel.
Oh, does it?
We actually do, yeah.
YouTube doesn't.
So. What do you have that plays?
It's some kind of acid rock. Something.
Striper to hell with the devil.
It's like a surfer, more of a surfer kind of vibe.
Kind of a surf punk kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was David's choice, wasn't it?
We had to pick something that he would approve. And you know how that can be. So.
Yes. Right.
He wanted stuff.
We love you, David.
He's well known, like there was a Joy Division song that he really likes, and we were going to try to get that, but like to get the copyright, they're not going to do that for
that's
you.
That's right.
I even tried to reach out to him, and he didn't get any response. So it's like, so anyway,
yeah.
So we picked something that kind of fits, and
because if you don't have it, you don't want a copyright infringement.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody wants to mess with that.
No.
So this is 2 weeks in a row with Jeff.
2 weeks in a row, right? With Jeff.
Yeah. Which is like lightning striking.
And, twice. And you were gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
right.
So that's not like lightning striking, but
no. So you're back,
and David's gone for one more week.
Yeah,
and then you and I can go somewhere and do something.
It's true.
We should.
Yeah,
just because.
We'll see.
Make him go from one. Just change the service times. Make him go from the Pine to here and back in the same day.
Yeah, I think David comes back Saturday, but then he said maybe Sunday.
He
but
knowing it might be Sunday,
knowing his wife, I'm banking on Friday.
Oh, really?
She usually comes home early.
Okay. Really?
She gets antsy and wants to get back to her. Well. Dogs or house or I don't know, they might have taken the dogs, but usually they're a day early. So that's, we'll see.
They're driving back though.
I'm not prophetic. It's just, this is just a, there's a pattern. If he does though, then he can come to our meeting on Saturday, which would be great.
True.
So,
anyway.
Right. But that's not on you, David, if you're not ready to come back.
No,
yet.
No.
Don't come back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
stay away.
Anyway.
There was this white stuff on the ground this morning. I'm not sure what it was.
We haven't seen it for a while.
It's been strangely lacking for a while.
Kind of
weird.
It's not supposed to last, though, it sounds.
Actually
like.
Shoveled just because I could.
Just for fun.
Like 2 inches, but I'm like, I'm doing it. Yeah, felt good.
Because it wasn't heavy.
Yeah.
You find pleasure in that shoveling snow?
You didn't get the snowblower out?
No, not for this one. No, I find to keep things tidy. So if some, you know, before the cars drive on,
you got to get it on there.
And,
I
know.
Did you make a little design in it or anything?
Okay. No snow angels?
Yeah, snow angels.
No.
Snow angels?
No.
You just see Brent out there.
No.
Snow angeling it up.
No, I love you for your wife, that sort of thing.
Nope, I just shoveled.
Okay.
I was doing it quick, so I was trying to get here on time and, you know. But
gotcha.
Got it done.
Yeah.
So.
And here you are.
You made it. I did not shovel.
I did not either.
I just drove on it.
I drove on my snow.
And I'll pay
the penalty. Yeah, I know you can't undo that, can you?
No, you got to keep up with it.
Can't.
It's going to turn to ice.
Especially
it's
when fall. It
gets. Yeah.
So when that's happened before, when there's been more snow, I didn't have a chance to shovel. I back out and then I come back in and I try to stay in the same tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife has not discovered that yet. You know, she just
messes it up. Yeah.
I've even tried to just shovel where my tires are going to go when I'm backing out, hoping that I hit it right. Never do. Like I think, okay, this looks about right, and then I go back out and I miss completely. Oh well.
But at least you tried.
I tried.
That's true.
Yeah. At least you tried.
That is true. If it does melt and then it gets icy, it's
Oh, well.
Although with this little snow, I think it'll melt and then it'll be gone. So.
Most likely.
Yeah. Although I guess the mountains are supposed to get some significant snow.
That's good.
When I left here, Mount Bachelor had 21 inches of snow.
Hoodoo closed for a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
was weird. In January or February. Yeah. That's
bizarre. Our neighbors that have two sets of skis each brought out their old skis because they told me they were skiing on rocks.
Yeah,
you know,
that makes sense.
At Bachelor. So
now I think their base is like 44.
That's good.
So. And
but it's usually
still that
150 by this time.
Yeah,
She's oh, pretty high.
I think so. We're engaging in old man talk right
we
now.
We are.
Yeah, I think we should jump into the topic. Go in.
Weather patterns and snowpack.
Expressive
and,
individualism.
Seahawks are up for sale. We could talk sports for a minute. I'm just
oh,
kidding.
Boy.
No.
Okay, so, Chad, since you jumped into the water first, what are we talking about today? What are we supposed to be talking about today?
Well, I just went on the notes that you sent out titled this Expressive Individualism. And so I don't know if I think that phrase was coined by Truman.
Yeah, I believe it was.
But he wrote a book about it, and it was Jeff Brott. So anyway, we can unpack the idea of expressive individualism, but Carl Truman has this dense book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self.
Here it is.
Display.
It's like 400 pages. Pretty academic. There is a dumbed-down version of the book. I can't remember the title of it, but there's kind of a layman's.
Rise and Triumph for Dummies?
Something like that, yeah. Okay. For the rest of us kind of thing. But anyway, he talks about this idea of just how do we get to the point where somebody could say something like, I'm a man trapped in a woman's body. How did culture get to the point where we can ask the question and you know that kind of thinking would be accepted? And I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but in the academic book, he gets into right out of the gate this idea that throughout time there have been kind of four different eras where, you know, and I forget, I'll probably mess them all up, but an example would be like there was an era where people got their identity from, you know, what they did in society. So, you know, mm-hmm. you were a cooper, you were a blacksmith, you know, whatever, and that was your identity. There was another era where people got their identity by, you know, their political affiliations. And so it goes through these kind of four, but the uniqueness of this modern era is that we don't get our identity from things outside of ourselves. We are now creating our identity from things inside of ourselves and very subjective. And then he goes on to talk about, you know, why that's not a good thing and how it's, you know, harmful to society.
Hmm. What's the name of the book?
Rise and the Triumph of the Modern Self.
Written in 2020.
Yeah.
5 years ago, that, 6 years ago.
Years. Dang.
Yeah.
So the author is a guy by the name of Carl Truman, and he's written over 20 books. He and I love the titles because they're all provocative. Well, not all of them. I mean, he's got one just called like Luther and, you know, something like that. But some of the other provocative ones are, I mean, I think David would love this. The Desecration of Man is one. The Real Scandal of the Evangelical Mind. Listen to this one. Republicrat Confessions.
Huh. I haven't seen that one.
And this one, The Wages of Spin. So this guy has got to be good, right?
I just looked at, so the layman's version of the dense book is called Strange New World, How Thinkers and Activities Redefined Identity and Sparked the Sexual Revolution.
That's a longer long title.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Not quite as provocative.
Shorter book, but a longer title?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. All right.
I know, he was born in 1967, so he's got to be good.
Anybody else we know?
It's a good year to be born, that's all I'm saying.
So. Yep.
So who is Carl Truman?
He's a Brit.
Yep.
He's an author.
He's a Presbyterian.
He's a Presbyterian. OPC.
Yeah. A good
Presbyterian. Yeah.
Good used guys. To be a professor at Western Theological Seminary.
Westminster.
That's what I tried to say. I don't know what I said. What did I say?
You said Western.
Well, he was, but actually he's now
in my mind, it was
Grove
Westminster.
City College.
Yeah.
And he's a teaching elder. He's got a PhD from the University of Aberdeen. And I don't know where that is. It can't be in Aberdeen, South Dakota.
I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe it's in England somewhere.
Probably so.
And a master's in classics from the University of Cambridge. So
he's bona fide.
Smart guy with an accent.
He's bona fide. Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. And so what we're going to be talking about today is... you know, with Chad's overview, but basically the comment that was made, a lengthy comment that was made about his book that describes some of the thing in his book. So anyway, so let's launch with that. And let me read this as a run up and then you guys can, I'll tee up the ball and then you swing at it. In his book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, historian Carl Truman argues that the dominant worldview of contemporary secular West is what he calls expressive individualism. This is the idea that each of us finds our meaning by giving expression to our own feelings and desires. And then he kind of adds on to the end of that about René Descartes, who was the Enlightenment thinker that said, that was famous for his dictum, you know, I think, therefore I am. And he says, expressive individualism is captured by the motto, I feel, therefore I am, or perhaps I am what I feel. And so he says that this expressive individualism is the dominant worldview in our in Western culture. I mean, is he onto something here?
It's funny because I remember pointing out at one point in time, I remember hearing people talk about, I feel this way, I feel this way, instead of saying, I think this or I think that. Mm-hmm. So when I was growing up, we just, you know, you would state what you thought about something. And young people now always talk about, I feel that. They don't say, I think something, I feel something. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird. So when I saw that, I immediately thought about that. And it's almost like that has more authority than
yeah, why do you think that is? I mean, why is that?
Well, I think we're living in a post-truth era, mm-hmm.
right?
Where there really is no such thing as, you know, your truth can be different than my truth and all that, but your feelings can trump this truth idea. It's kind of a bizarre. I mean, I'm not even sure how we
say
got
that
there.
Our feelings are true is what we would say, and feelings are a good thing given to us by God, but they're not always true. Right? Mm-hmm. Our feelings aren't always truthful with us.
Well, we would say that, but I don't think that the people that have this worldview would. I would say that their feelings are the most true thing that they can experience.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to think we've gotten to this point now where that's like the, you know, the ultimate authority is your feelings, which is it's kind of terrifying when we're just thinking it through.
Well, I think feelings have become direction instead of data, right, in the sense that
Say that again, I missed it.
I think feelings have become direction instead of data. What I mean by that is instead of it just being, making me aware of something that I feel about a situation or even somebody else, I'm just going to do that, right? So there's no thinking through the feelings, which I think is what we're lacking for different reasons. And I think that's what he's trying to get at is that I'd almost call it the excessive individualism.
Sure.
Expressive, right? Excessive individualism.
We've just elevated ourselves to a status, I think, oftentimes above God.
Yeah, sure.
It's become a source. It's really, in essence, it's become idolatry.
It's funny because I was trying to decide if this was narcissism. and it's not quite. I mean, it could turn into that, but it's very similar. Like there's this idea now of, you know, you know, you're at the center of your universe, and the way you view things is you know, this idea that you're the ultimate authority and this kind of thing. And so they really, I don't know, they seem like they're closely tied to each other, even though nobody would want to be called a narcissist.
There's an aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, which, clinically just narcissistic in that.
It's, which you would, most everybody would paint that as a very negative thing.
Yeah.
But they would paint expressive identification as a very positive thing in this worldview, at least. Yep. So,
So it's kind of like a person's intuitions, you know, whatever is ginned up by their feelings or whatever, is just automatically rises to the top. There doesn't seem to be a filter of accepted, you know, paradigm truth out there somewhere that it has to fit in, or even any other kind of subjective truth. It's just kind of like
morality, even.
Mm-hmm. Or morality, right.
Like, seriously, morality. Right. You don't even have to think about what anybody else thinks.
Yep.
Right.
It's whatever you, it's up to you.
Yep. Yeah. And it's, go ahead.
No, I was thinking about this because I remember back in the, I think it was back in the 90s that Josh McDowell wrote a book. I think it was called Right and Wrong, or, you know, something like to that effect. And he was talking about this idea, you know, that many years ago, that absolute truth is going away. Like, truth is becoming relative. Like truth is not objective. It's not absolute. It's determined by you.
You know?
And I remember thinking, that really? And he was onto something. And we've
seeing
the outplay of that now, how many years later. You know, it's just fascinating to watch it play out. And I think that's where it plays out is that feelings trump truth.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or facts, you know.
Well, and that idea of authenticity, which you always, whenever that word comes up, you kind of you make that face. But now I get it in this light because that becomes like the ultimate expression.
That's the gold standard.
It is it's more important to be authentic, no matter what that is, than to be, you know, moral or ethical or true, you know, correct or anything like that. It's just authentic,
and you have to
accept me.
Authentically a jerk.
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
It's weird. It's, yeah.
So well, yeah. And as Jeff talked about the McDowell's book, highlighting that truth was becoming a relative thing. There was also a time, and I don't remember exactly when it was. Maybe late 70s, early 80s. You were just a kid, Brent. So, but it was defined as situational ethics.
Yeah.
So, you know, the situation defines what is okay and what's not okay.
Right.
Because ethics are, what is, you know. Morality is what should be. Ethics is what is.
Right.
And what is okay or not determined by the situation. And so that's been chucked too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting as we just even look at the political landscape of, you know, things going on and you see, you know, headlines, you know, coming from both sides, you know, news articles that are looking at the same situation and coming to very, very different conclusions about, you know, whatever the latest thing that happened is. And it's because, well, I feel like this is wrong, therefore it is, or I feel like this is right, and it is. And even that is just playing out in this idea of, you know, I think, therefore, or I feel, therefore I am. And, you know, if you don't agree with my feelings, then you're the one that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Truman, and it was one of the questions you probably won't get to, and that's okay. That's okay. Was that he says he says that this has been championed mostly by the left, and or maybe co-opted is a better word. By the left to advance a political agenda like you're talking about. My question was, so we will get to it. Are there ways, or do you think that this kind of thing could be co-opted, or maybe is being co-opted, by both sides of the political spectrum?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, what's that look like?
I think so. I think it is because you think about on both sides, you have that same direction. It's what I feel about that, or it's not what I think about that, or what is true about that. It's what I feel about that. And so I don't think it's being driven. I don't think it's personally being driven by just the left. I think you see it on both sides of the political spectrum. And typically it can be to push an agenda. I just think we've allowed it. I think even in the church, we've sort of coalesced to it. Like, we haven't pushed back on it.
Sure.
And you see that, you know, even in our even in a church service, right? People come and they want to know how that made them feel.
Yeah.
Right. Or if it wasn't what they liked,
right,
well, then I'm going to go somewhere else, or I'm going to take my Bible and
or
go
even
home.
What was true, like, you know?
Yeah.
Right. It's
yeah.
like, well, the truth was spoken, the truth was preached. It was, you know, but it didn't make me feel good. So I'm not going to go anymore, or whatever the case might be. So yeah. I think it's being pushed by both sides of the.
I think it's a human issue that we're seeing across all lines, where there's this kind of self autonomy.
What I
desire and what I like, that don't tread on me kind of thing really does fit into this pretty well.
Sure.
You know, this idea that I've got,
you
know, nobody can tell me what to do and no matter what. And what's
we don't
that
have
based
that here
on?
Though in Central Oregon.
Well, no, not at
I've
all.
Seen it here and there. I have it. I mean, I have it. That's why I can say it's like, you know, I think I have, when I'm reading about this and I'm like, I think I might have this.
Crap.
Yeah.
Brent, you're excused. we'll continue.
So there's something in there where you don't want a boss. You don't want somebody telling you what to do how things are supposed to be. And we all have that.
Yeah.
And now it's going to come out.
Yeah.
It's the way we identify it, it's harder to see it, you know, in yourself than it is in somebody else. And so if you have a political identity, that you're clinging to, or that you're, you know, loyal to, you're not going to see it on that side as much as you're going to see it on the other side,
because
it's going to show up in ways that are, you know, really obnoxious to you on the other side,
right.
And it's going to show up in ways that aren't on this side. So that's
you might, you're probably not even going to see it on your own side at all,
right?
Tribalism plays into this as well, is that we're loyal to our tribes, and so our tribe can do no wrong. The other tribe is completely wrong all the time in everything.
Yep.
But our tribe is really good at spotting it in the other tribe.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, 100%.
When you think about it, I mean, just go back to the Garden of Eden, right? I mean, what was Satan doing from the beginning? Well, did God really say it's written?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and then it says when Eve saw that it was pleasing to the eyes, it was. I mean, that's what she did, you know? And so I think there's an aspect where this has been going on from
it's human
from
nature.
The beginning.
Yeah.
But I also think in the last 15 years, it's probably been more in our faces.
Mm.
I think it's, and I think in the last 5 years, even more so, I think since COVID,
sure.
I think it's been way
well,
more
again, when you, once you move from finding your identity to with something outside of yourself mm-hmm. to something inside of yourself, it does change the paradigm 100%. A lot.
Yeah.
And so I think the same thing before, mm-hmm. like when you met somebody, you know, my dad was a police officer. And so that was part of his identity.
Yep.
And first thing he would lead with, I mean, that was a big part of who he was. And even the idea of desiring to be thought of as somebody with integrity, mm-hmm. Kind of, you know, you're a moral person, or that mattered back mm-hmm. when I was growing up. I mean, it really mattered that you worked hard, that you had a good work ethic,
right.
and mm-hmm. morally you were thought of well. I don't think people care about that in the same way that they used to. And it's weird. It's like, how do you get mm-hmm. to that point? But
go ahead.
Like there was a time where society would kind of serve as you know, kind of the bowling mm-hmm. bumpers
yeah.
and say, like, no, that's not. Right. Appropriate. That's not mm-hmm. good thinking. That's mm-hmm. not acceptable. But because we've made the shift from, you know, kind of external to internal, you know, mm-hmm. the bumpers are not there anymore.
I remember when girls used to care about their reputation. Like, I hated it. I hated it at the time because you know it messed up my plans. Right. No, but I mean, it was like seriously, if you were thought of as a loose girl or I mean, that was horrible.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, and I don't even think that kind of is on the radar anymore. It's like you can do whatever you want. It's okay. It's just mm-hmm. it's just strange.
Yeah.
To drill down a little bit on the way that Truman says this, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. He says that that expressive individualism is a way for people to find their meaning. It's one thing to have feelings. It's another thing to have really strong feelings.
Sure.
But what is there something that's being bridged there when we say that our feelings are our meaning?
Sure.
And what implications could that have?
Looking for love in all the wrong places, you know, at the end of the day. You know, there's one thing that provides ultimate meaning to the human being, and that's mm-hmm. found in Christ. Mm-hmm. Anything else falls short of providing for us truly what our meaning is, yet we look anywhere and everywhere but Christ for our meaning. And for people that are just, you know, the God of this age has blinded the minds of those who don't believe, mm-hmm. right? We're lost souls looking for meaning wherever we can find it. And so we find it in our kind of internal identity, our gender, our sexuality, our, you know, hot button issues right now. We mm-hmm. look for meaning, you know, in what we do, you know, for a living and what we contribute to society and those kinds of things. And those things ultimately don't provide the thing that we're looking for.
I remember R.C. Sproul years ago wrote a book called The Search for Significance. Mm-hmm. And I read that and I only remember one thing from that
but
book.
But you remember one thing.
Remember one thing. I think I do. And that was that the desire, to Chad's point, for significance or meaning is probably the most powerful thing in our lives. So you're dealing
sure.
mm-hmm. with dynamite here. If that's true, if expressive individualism is attaching itself to meaning, you know, that is my meaning. Yeah. That's me. That's my identity. Mm-hmm. It's a tinderbox.
Well, our feelings are fluid, right? And so if we're basing our meaning on our feelings, then that means our meaning is also fluid. And so it's subject to change from moment to moment or circumstance to circumstance.
So another thing that you brought up, Chad, a few minutes ago about the bumpers, the bowling bumpers, is that there used to be these things, there are these things. We can call them institutions. We can call them accepted mores. We can call them a lot of different things that are supposed to keep us kind of as a culture, you know, pointed in a certain direction, at least not a destructive one. Mm-hmm. And so now it seems like with expressive individualism, if you bump up against the bumper, you don't self-correct and go back. Your desire is to destroy the bumper.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for a long time, and I think it's shifting even in the church. I think the church was one of those bumpers, and to help people self-correct. And I think it became seen as something that was bad. Like we were like, I mean, there's like you think about some of those things like guilt and shame, and some of those things that now have been changed in our culture to be something negative, but ultimately we're designed to actually push you closer to right to mm-hmm. to God. Yep. You know, to understand that we should feel shame when we sin.
Right.
Right. And it should point us to Christ, you know, sure. and forgiveness and those things. And I think those, I almost feel like those bumpers have even gotten wider, but I think you're right. I think it's like, if you disagree with me or that bumper, then I gotta just get it out of the way so I'll feel better.
Yeah. Right. And be okay living in the gutter. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the other part of it, is not just destroy the bumper, but to be okay with the thing the bumper was keeping you from, right. You know?
Right.
Well, you don't think about that when you're
doing
it.
Which really wouldn't matter as long as it's not an impediment to the expression of my feelings.
Right.
Right.
This showed up to me in the whole defund the police movement that showed up, where you had this authority that existed that did have some corruption. There's no question about it. And so they're like, we got to get rid of this completely. Mm-hmm. We got to get rid of this authority because it's that bumper we were bumping up against. We don't like it. So they blow the bumper up. Right. And then they went, oh. They didn't like the gutter.
Yeah.
And then it was like, let's rethink this a little bit. But we do that. Anything that's going to present itself as an authority that challenges that, whatever's inside of me, we're going to want to get rid of.
I think the issue comes, though, when in situations like that, I think about the other one in Portland was, you know, they did away with, you know, sort of almost drugs being illegal, right? Yeah. And they're like, but then there's no admittance to, we made a mistake.
No.
Right.
We're going to put these bumpers back in place, right? It's like, so what are we doing now? You know, and I think that's part of the challenge sometimes as well, is like, it's sort of like the deconstruction movement, right? Is that there's no biblical authority outside of self that's doing anything to reconstruct it. It's just being deconstructed, but there's nothing that's being reconstructed. There's no authority outside of self that is being looked at to reconstruct something. Because I think there are things that we can all look at in our world, in our church, you know, the church in general as well, and say there's some things we've done well and some things we've done poorly. And there's some things that could be deconstructed, but then they're not rebuilt or they're not reconstructed on any authority outside of ourselves. That's where the issue, I think, comes is...
And the failure, I mean, so institutions, whether it's the police or the church or whatever, are not perfect, and there's corruption, there's breakdown, there's all those kinds of things. But it seems to me that the reason that it is attacked, these institutions, these bumpers, are attacked by expressive individualism, is not because of their inherent flaws. It's just because they're in the way of me getting to express myself.
Yep. Right.
You know, it's not because there's something wrong with it. And the main thing wrong with it is it's getting in my way.
Right. Yeah. Right. Totally.
And I think part of the problem is when the bumpers don't push back.
Sure.
Right. I mean, because you think about that even within the church, right?
We need to electrify the bumpers.
Yeah, right.
There we go.
Yeah. When it comes to accountability or it comes to trying to help people that are, you know, stuck in sin and, you know, you're trying to provide some bumpers, really, some boundaries. And instead of allowing that to be good and to push them into right relationship with Christ, it's seen as bad, and then we're just walking away.
Yeah,
you know? This is the thing that is baffling to me, is like the freedom is the ultimate desire in this. And it used to be like we wanted to be seen as good or moral, and so you could appeal to people on the basis of the law and stuff. Now, freedom is the ultimate expression that we're looking for, and we're trying to knock these bumpers down to get there.
Yeah.
But true freedom is only found in Christ, and it's like, this is the part that nobody's getting. This is the ironic part. It's like, you want to be free. If the Son sets you free, you're really free.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that they need more than anything else. But even the way we evangelize and talk to people now about these things, probably we need to not change the gospel, but contextualize this idea. Cause if freedom is what they're looking for, we have the ultimate freedom in Christ.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the message, I mean, the way that it's explained or the way that it is served up to those, matters a lot, but the thing that they need to be free from is the very thing that they are championing the most, which is themselves, right?
Keller talked about once, and I forget the exact. We talked about the fish, and use this example of, you know, the fish while he's in water, you know, has everything he needs to survive.
Yeah,
if the fish were free to jump out of the water, he wouldn't survive, you know, outside of the water, and so it's not that boundaries are bad, but it's the right kind of boundaries that give us the freedom that we're looking for.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was more thinking in terms of when we are sharing the gospel with people now, if we try the Ray Comfort method of like, well, you know, have you ever sinned? And they're going, nah, I don't even believe sin's a possibility.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
In my new paradigm. You know, it's like, that's hard to appeal to somebody there. And so rethinking how we frame these discussions with people is probably in order if we're dealing with a whole new, you know, worldview.
Yeah, it is, and it's yeah. it causes us to get off our game, to say the least. Yeah. I remember it was like 30 years ago. My wife went over to because we'd talked to this couple that lived next door, well, not next door, but on the property next to ours, and we knew that they were secular and so forth, and they knew that we were Christian. So Nancy went over. She, you know, Lord, just go over and talk to her. So she sat down. They had their coffee, you know, and learned to talk. And she was explaining the gospel to her, and she said, well, the lady's name was Renita. I can say that because she's gone now.
Okay.
But Renita, have you sinned? And she goes, no. Yeah. I mean, there's your, yeah. Okay.
Where do you what's go your from plan? There?
Yeah, where do you go from there?
Right? So anyway. Just, no, so, I mean, but the comfort would say, you know, have you ever told a lie? Okay, well, then you're, you know, you're right. A liar. Have you ever taken a pen from work? Okay, then you're a thief. Have you ever thought about something? He would work through that thing. But if none of those things are, you know, viewed
so
as.
So the way that most of this expressive individualism finds its expression is by speech, and this guy that's commenting on Truman says this. He says that is Western culture over the last 15 years, especially as promoted by the political left. Now, we've already talked about that. It's why speech is called violence. It's why words are spoken of as being weaponized. Everything is a weapon if I am under attack when my feelings aren't affirmed. So
yeah.
How did speech become violence?
Well, I think he kind of nailed it. Like, if it's coming, if you say something, if you tell me that my feelings are wrong, you hate me. Yeah. You don't love me. Yeah. You're not for me if you tell me that what I feel is wrong.
Yeah. Well, because it's not thought against thought or idea against idea. It's person not, against person.
Right. We're not objectively thinking anymore. You know, like that's a problem in society. We're losing that ability.
So is there a problem if I'm coming to somebody to talk to them about this, and I'm dealing with a thought, and they're dealing with a feeling, which constitutes their personhood?
Right.
I mean, are they assuming that I'm coming at it the same way they
what
are?
What can go wrong?
You know, what could go wrong?
Right.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, think about it. You're coming at it from two different perspectives.
Yeah.
And how do you get to a – it requires – one of the things it requires a relationship. It also requires a willingness to take the time to work through that.
Sure.
And I think that's part of what we aren't doing either, because I think we've – I think you kind of alluded to it a little bit, is that we've isolated ourselves, right? So much of our life is private. Right. And so when it's so private, like, you know, we got our phones, whatever. I mean, this is my private life. So then I've just become the end into itself. Right. And I make my own decision because I'm the ultimate authority. And so when you begin to try to unpack that and understand it, it just takes time to do it. But I don't think I think you have to keep coming at it from maybe both perspectives, where I'm coming at it trying to think through it, which I'm probably maybe a little bit more apt to do because I'm not, let's say, in the situation. Maybe somebody's dealing with something going on, they're feeling their way through it. But I'm more apt to think through it because I'm not in it, right? So maybe I can just bring a different perspective to them, and maybe that's part of the conversation, is to say, well, have you thought about this?
Even that's hard. I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I see it play
did
out on my social media feed every day.
Yeah, right.
I see every day on my social media feed people coming at an issue, you know, emotionally, and people coming at it, you know, kind of more analytical or intellectually, and they're doing exactly what you're talking about, arguing from two different perspectives and not getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the person that's coming at it emotionally just is dumbfounded that people don't feel what they feel. And the person that's coming from it more, you know, analytically, are dumbfounded that like, why can't you just have, you know, objectively look at a situation and nobody's getting anywhere.
And they want us to feel as passionately about that as they do.
Right.
right? Well, so if I have this issue, I'm demanding that you feel the same way I do. And if you don't, well, you don't like me.
And the demand on the other side is like engage your brain in this, right? And let's just think about it.
The idea to disagree is now abusive or hostile or hateful.
Violence.
I mean, speech can be violence. I mean, there's obnoxious people out there that can say things that are, I mean, the whole idea of sticks and stones, you know, words can hurt. You can hurt people with words, but this is different than that. It's not like, because I've seen the same thing on social media where people are just lobbing insults and it's obnoxious and mean. But this is the idea that it just to simply disagree. We can't disagree anymore. And I don't know how that happened in society or where we got to, but,
We need a little more I'm rubber, you're glue than the sticks and stones, you know.
I mean, again, as a Christian, this is just my, you know, for me, I would be surprised if people agreed with my Christian worldview. I don't expect them to. I kind of expect them not to. And I'm not offended when they don't. I mean, I want them to. But again, if somebody doesn't view my traditional view of marriage or my whatever, you know, the way I view abortion, if they disagree with that, I'm not shocked at that. I expect you to probably disagree with that unless you're, you know, submitted to God's word and submitted to his authority. But I wish it could go both ways because we've lost that now.
Yeah, we have. We've lost the ability to agree to disagree.
Even. Yeah, right. If you say 2 + 2 = 5 and I don't agree with you, you know, you hate me and this is violent. It's like, no.
When I think to do it respectfully, I think we've lost that ability as well.
Totally.
And I think
social media
does
not help us that way.
Like those things that you're saying on Facebook or Instagram, you wouldn't say to that person's face.
Right.
So, because you might get punched, but you're going to hide behind
the
keyboard to do it.
Maybe you should get punched, right? Like.
In Jesus' name, of course.
That would be a great feature in a computer, man. Just
I mean, you know, like social media, like there's no consequence to,
it's not a fist
to social media arguments.
Right. You can talk past each other and it's just all theater.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. And so there's no consequences. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we can say what we want to say.
Well, So think about that for a second. So the person that's coming with our objective reality, truth, right, and they don't accept that, right? How is that different than them, you know, expressing their feelings to us and we don't accept that?
Well, because I'm right, you're wrong. That's
why
it's
different. But I mean, isn't that the same kind of, I mean, it might have a different root, you know, in terms of logic or subjective reality, but the person to person way that that's delivered is basically the same.
Yeah.
You idiot. Don't you see these are the facts, right? And
at the end of the day, the people that don't think like us, just like I'm convicted about what I think, well, they're convicted about what they think too. And so setting aside for a moment who's right and who's wrong, like we both have, you know, these convictions that we're convinced are right. Mm-hmm. And maybe they both can't be right. So we've got to figure out how to thread the needle and navigate that.
Agree to disagree is something we used to do. And you could still be friends. You could still, again, not like you're going to hang out all the time, but you could still be friendly and respectful and kind.
Yeah.
And I don't know where that's gone. But as Christians, we need to remember to be that way to people, because we're going to continually run into people that disagree with us and that we disagree with, and the way we do that matters.
It does.
And I wish more Christians got that right now, because again, the way you see it play out on social media is so ugly, and it just kills our testimony when we stoop down to this weird place.
So are you saying that demeanor has something to do with
this?
No, I mean, it does. No, seriously. Because we're talking about content. Yeah. Content here, content there. You know, feelings here, thoughts there. But you're saying that just the demeanor.
Well, again, you look at Jesus. He was disagreed with continually.
And he was always right.
he was always right. That's the difference. That's the difference. Yeah. But we have his word. We can stand on his word is right.
Sure.
But again, the way we do this, you know, speak the truth in love and to have charity. And again, it doesn't mean we don't make a stand. We still have to make a stand as Christians and believe, you know, what God's word says. But we can do that with a lot more charity than we often
do. I think your goal matters. Like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to win an argument? Are you trying to be right? Or are you trying to influence somebody towards Christ? And depending on what your goal is, that's going to dictate how you approach conversations and people and those kinds of things. So like if I'm trying to win an argument, I don't, all I care about is that I'm going to win in the end. I don't care about your feelings or if that crushes you.
Yep.
But if I'm trying to point you towards Christ, I'm going to have a different demeanor and maybe even a different approach to the conversation. And I think about, like while you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, when we met those guys at McMenamins, that one day we got into a conversation with some guys that I think one guy was maybe an agnostic and another guy was a different faith. And we sat there for almost 4 hours and had conversations with a couple of guys that were not like us. And like we got into some things, you know, with these guys, and the conversation ended with hugs and exchanging phone numbers.
And not agreeing with each other.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Not agreeing.
We walked away not agreeing with each other, but friend, not, you know, actually we've gotten together even again since then. But it was neat when you can find a way to reach across the table to somebody that disagrees with you and understand them and seek to understand, seek to like, okay, what makes you tick and where are you coming from? I just wish people took more time to do that. You still might end up not agreeing.
Yeah.
But at least you have some kind of relationship and clarity as far as where they're even coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where the being intentional about it. And I think it's where the relational aspect has sort of gone by the wayside, you know, is
yeah.
I'm not going to engage with somebody typically on social media over something, a post or whatever. I'm going to, if I know them, I want to sit down and have a conversation with them face to face, because it's so much different to sit across the table from somebody and see their face and hear what they're walking through and why are they responding that way or what's going on in their life that's caused that.
But not everybody wants that.
No, they don't, because they don't,
they'd rather stay behind the keyboard.
They would. Yep.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know what to do with that. You can, I think it's in some point it's sort of, I mean, in some ways, it's sort of like Jesus said, you shake the dust off your sandal and you move on. Because sometimes you can spend so much time trying to win the argument, so to speak, that you're neglecting other relationships with people that are open to the gospel.
Well, when somebody feels an open threat because you disagree with them, I mean, they're viewing it as like you're coming at them with you know, a weapon of some kind, weaponized speech or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah, you're not probably going to be able to get past that.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know how to fix that. It has to do with loving people. I mean, that has to be the beginning point to with anything, right? But the ironic thing about the Facebook wars, where so much of this happens, you know, where they're shooting past each other with thoughts and feelings and all that kind of stuff, is oftentimes you can see it in posts that people make that are making what they would say are subjective the arguments that are rooted in objective truth, not subjective.
Yeah, yeah.
And but the reason that they want to win the argument, because it makes them feel good.
Sure.
Which is what
which
is what the other person is really, you know, that's so you see what I mean.
But there's Christians that I watch them post things that they're just assuming that this is objective truth and it's not the word of God. It's just their opinion about something. Mm-hmm. And they're putting it out there like everybody's gonna agree with this because duh, why wouldn't they? And then they get kicked back and it just blows up from there.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got to be wise.
You see relationships destroyed.
100%. Well, now we're seeing that even in the church right now, where you've got family members that because of the way you voted or whatever it is, now you're a hostile threat to my family.
Unfriend me now if you voted a different way.
And
that's insanity.
It's a weird world to be in.
It is. Yeah. It's weird. It seems like it's just been in the last handful of years that has become the case. I mean, I've never seen that before.
2020 seemed to be the year that really started to move it in a more rapid direction for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to the point of where this has disrupted, you know, we talked about cutoff culture a few weeks ago, which is probably, you know, very closely connected. It's not a very, very far stretch. Is that when there are family members and those with close connections like that are separated by things like this? It's kind of, isn't it kind of where we have let this become the issue? The person, their expressive individualism, and maybe what it is that they're trying to force feed the rest of us, right? Instead of and then that's the issue that we want to take on. And instead of the issue is, you know what, that person needs Christ, and we're gonna get to maybe some tracks to run on to do that. Because one of the things that, how are we doing on time, by the way?
We should probably get to the
track. Get the track to it. Okay.
I mean, it's so 10
so
minutes,
so what one, do we do?
Okay. So Truman says this. He says, every age has had its darkness and its dangers, and the task of the Christian is not to whine about the movement, You haven't, say that part again, really into the microphone, really loudly.
Of
the Christian is not to whine about the moment
okay.
in which he or she lives, but to understand its problems and respond appropriately to them. And what I would add to that, our appropriate Christian response is not just present, but how to make the gospel tasty to somebody sure. like that. So, so do you hear church members grumble and whine about stuff like this?
Never.
No, never.
It's not on social media.
I never
at
whine
all,
about it. Know. So,
well, I think we lose sight of, again, going back to this, like, what's your end goal here? Is it, you know, to win an argument, or is it to win somebody to Christ?
And is it redemption?
I think, yeah, I think we've kind of lost sight of, you know, our goal as Christians in the world is to win people to Christ in all that we do, mm-hmm. But especially in, you know, the things that we're talking about. And I think we just have lost sight of that.
I think it's one thing, too, you know, to there's those things that we see going on in the world and people responding to them and different things that are happening. And there's some of those things that the reality is we can't do anything about those mm-hmm. sort of world issues. But I think we can do those things, something about those things that we see in our communities, in our churches, and with our people is how do we focus on those relationships and what's going on with them and why are we responding that way and how do we at times push back and disagree in a loving and kind way?
Sure.
You know, I think about Ephesians 4, you know.
Yeah.
Be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another.
Everything
right?
for upbuilding.
Yeah, I just mm-hmm. think it if we could just take on those perspectives, even in conflict, it would totally change, I think, the way that we do that. And it goes back to, I think, what somebody said earlier about your demeanor.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the tone that I'm coming mm-hmm. at someone. And I can't control that somebody thinks, you know, it's sort of like when our kids would say, well, stop yelling at me. You're like, I'm not yelling at you, you know, but sometimes people take that way because I'm disagreeing with them.
Sure.
Right.
And I think we've got to pay attention even to simple things like body language. And I can recognize, oh, okay, what I just said to you, it you know, maybe it poked at it a little bit, or I can mm-hmm. tell by your response that maybe we need to pick up this conversation a little bit later. You know, or whatever the case might be, and paying attention to those things. But
I mean, if someone wants a serious challenge, endeavor to build up in every conversation,
mm-hmm.
that sounds good, but it's hard.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard, especially when you get into contentious issues, to just think in your mind, how can I be upbuilding in this conversation, mm-hmm. not tearing down or destroying, mm-hmm. you know, standing on truth, standing on conviction, not compromising, but with the end goal to upbuild. That's hard.
Yeah. We might silence our mouths and our keyboards a lot if we started with let no unwholesome word proceed off of your keyboard.
Yep.
But
Well, and again, what is the, if your goal is to make our country a better place, or make the world a better place, or make my neighborhood a better place, if that's what we're trying to accomplish.
A better place is defined like I want it to be, mm-hmm. right?
I feel more comfortable, and I do understand why, you know, the country we live in matters, and you know, but if it's like I want a moral America again, and that's our goal, then, you know, it's going to be, that's probably what you're seeing a lot of, you know, why people are doing what they're doing. As Christians, the reason we're here is to make sure people hear the gospel. We're to be salt and light in the world, and so that people connect the dots back to our Father and find mm-hmm. life in Him. And so if our goal is evangelism, then demeanor matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure, you know, it does.
Our neighborhoods, our communities should be better places because we're in them filled Christ.
Yeah,
Christ
and obviously we want that. You know, we want that.
Yeah,
well, that's again, like if a Christian walking into a room is a breath of fresh air and not a stench, that's, you know, that helps our cause.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I remember I'm not on Facebook much, but I remember this real heated thing. It was going back and forth. And then the guy that I knew from high school, I don't know whether he's a believer or not, but he made this point, this point, and this point. And then down at the bottom of his post, he put respectfully with a comma. And I noticed the responses after that. I mean, it took the temperature out of that, the conversation, not just with him and the gal, but with everybody. He just said, and it, just one word. You know, respectfully.
Yeah.
Like, I respect
you. No, when you see it, when you see a post like that that's done clear with that clear humility and respect, that's just, you can just see it. It changes the whole thing.
It did. It really does. Lowered the temperature on everything.
Yeah. I listened to Jonathan Lehman one time use the phrase to try to bring more light than heat into things. And that's when you said that my mind just kind of went there. You know, bring more light than heat.
My first draft is usually where I bring the heat. And then about my fifth draft is where I go for
that. Well, you think about even that illustration, it's like, it's not shining it directly in their eyes. Right. Yeah. Right? It's like, let's just bring it in gently into the darkness. And laser.
It's like sweating them under a lamp. Yeah. Right?
Have you been drinking, son? You know, it's
I
like,
have
no.
ways of making you talk. Yeah, you so does shake your head and cursing under your breath help?
Sometimes. If I'm honest,
is that self-control? Isn't that self-control?
Okay. Or how about
I'm joking.
How about hollering it out of your car window as you drive by? Does that help?
That usually helps.
No, I honestly, the thing that just kept coming back to my mind as I thought about this is the more time, if we were spending more time in prayer than we were complaining, whining, and you know, attacking things. But just truly praying for the people around us, and seems like time better spent.
So I find myself these days, R.C. Sproul kind of lives in my head with the "What's wrong with you people?"
Yeah,
you know, and like I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it's just that soundtrack plays in my head a lot.
You need to hear it
days.
Every now and then.
He was talking to Christians,
right? Yeah. So one thing, maybe if we in closing here, if we could just get a kind of a condensed version. Because we understand as believers that this search for significance, this desire for expressive individualism and meaning, and all those things are those are God-given things,
sure.
Right? I mean, the desire for those things, but this thing that we're dealing with or talking about, expressive individualism, is basically the symptom of something that's deeper, right? Mm-hmm. Desire. So, with that being the case, can I ask each one of you, as you think about it, what gospel approach might you take with a highly charged, expressive individualist? Somebody that, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about somebody that's ranting in your face sure. right at the moment, but maybe. But what gospel approach, what realizing that this is something that is God-given, that's in them, that's broken, just like, you know, every other thing in our lives. How would you go about that? If we're to be redemptive about that, what would that look like?
I think I would, and just because of the way that I'm wired, I'm more of an analytical person, and so I tend to go to the analytical questions, like what if God exists, and what if He created, and what if He's sovereign overall, and what if, you know, He made you male or female according to His good plan? Like what if that's true? Mm-hmm. You may not think it is, but just consider what if it is
throwing
true.
It out
well,
there.
Well, then what?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Brent.
Well, I'm trying to think of where they're trying to get to with this philosophy, as far as putting themselves at the center of everything, and where that's going to get them. So I guess I would try to lovingly say there's a better way, where Christ is at the center of everything, and his burden is easy and his yoke is light, and this is really the answer, because I've tried it both ways. Mm-hmm. I've tried doing the expressive individualism where I'm the center of everything and I'm my own authority, and I get my way all the time, and that's going to lead me into a it's not going to work. It's not going to lead me where I think it's going to lead me to, and so if somebody's ultimate goal is freedom, and that's the ultimate virtue to have is to be free, I want them to see that there's a better freedom.
Right.
Okay.
Where come and die, which makes no sense at all, is the answer that you need and you're looking for.
Yeah.
And that's, again, my personal testimony. But I mean, when I finally did that, all of a sudden life and freedom came flooding in. And I mean, it's just like, it's a wonderful thing when you're looking for meaning and significance and fulfillment and that thing to satisfy your soul.
Yep.
It's like, we've got it, you know? And so that's where I go.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Jeff?
I think of a couple things. One is, I think personally, in my own life, I have to exalt Christ over self so that they see there's something.
Yeah.
There's something different bigger about the way that I live. But I think that then the other thing is, I think exalting Christ over self in conversations with them. I think about Paul, you know, when he wrote his letters, he typically in the first part of them focused on all the things that God has done for us through Christ. And then he said, then this is how you should live, right? And and I think that, like in Romans, when he does that, and he says in Romans 12, therefore, because of the mercies of God, you know, and I think that's, I think some of it is trying to draw them out of self and getting them to think about someone bigger than themselves. Because I do think that if meaning is significant for everybody, there's a need to be needed, then I think there's an aspect where we have to help them understand that Christ is the ultimate fulfillment of that, of that meaning. And so we have to live it first. And then I think in the conversations that we have with them, I think we've got to exalt Christ over self.
Yeah. And the search for identity, that's, you're not going to find a better place to look than in him.
Yeah.
You're loved, you're accepted, you're valued.
Yeah.
You've got a future, a solid future ahead of you, you know, an inheritance.
And if that's true,
it is true, Chad.
Yeah. Well, and you think about Romans, even Romans 12, logically, where he says,
if that's true. Wow.
But be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Sense. It's true.
So there's you, I think there's a transformation.
What about you?
I think that a way that I might approach it is that if the issue is identity and self mattering, is to try to say that, you know, in God has assigned you so much more significance and meaning and status and everything else just by being made in his image, that selling yourself short to box it up and say, this is me right here on this issue or this thing or anything like that, that because it basically closes you off. In other words, you're in, was it Lewis that was saying that, you know, we sell ourselves short because we are content to sit in the gutter and make mud pies when God had in mind for us a weekend at the beach, right? Mm. So it's kind of selling yourself short. You know, you're actually kind of missing out on the bigness that God has assigned you. Something like that.
Yeah, it's good.
So anyway. So how are we doing, Brent, time-wise?
We did it.
Hey, all right. I just took a small beating before we started. I want everybody to know that. I'm out of questions.
in love, of course.
In love.
Yeah, it was. It looked like a lot of questions to cover, and the way you handled it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
I mean, I would encourage people to read books like this, even as dense as they are, because I think it helps to just challenge them in their thinking.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we just sort of get in our own heads, you know?
Right.
And I think it helps you understand, you know, the people we're trying to reach and what they're, you know, again, this is like very, very different than the way I was raised and what I'm thinking. But if this is the, you know, the generations that are coming up are now thinking this way, we need to find a way to connect to that.
Yeah. And one of the things even he says in his introduction is that he, in some of the groups that he talks about, like the LGBTQ plus and others, he's like, I've tried to write in a way so that they would read it and would agree with what I've said by way of what their perspective is, you know? So I think it helps to give a pretty good perspective of, okay, here's these different groups in the world and what they generally think about these issues.
So Rise and Triumph of Modern Self, or if you want the more layman's version, Strange New World, both by Carl Truman. Good reads.
So Brent, why don't you pray us out?
Lord, thank you so much for smart people that write good books that help us, Father, to engage people in this world today. And we just pray that you would help us as Christians and as pastors to have charitable, respectful, humble hearts. Lord, thank you that you've saved us, that you reached us, Lord. And we want to obviously reach as many people as we can with the truth of the gospel, Lord, and to help people find their true identity in you. So just as a church, Lord, we pray that you would give us more and more opportunities to love this community well and to see more and more people come to you. And give us wisdom, Lord, so that when we do engage with people, we do it in a way that honors you and represents our Savior well. And we ask that in his name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to One Decent Pastor. If you'd like more information about the church, go to our website at thedoor3r.org.